Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everybody, and happy Foot of Snow Day. Happy Return of the Polar Vortex Day. We're collecting your tweets about the snow plowing on your block. Tell us where they did and did not come through at WNYC or at Brian Lehrer. The temperature now 8 lonely degrees in the city, though the sun is now shining, at least here in lower Manhattan. Central Park snowfall, 11 inches. Total flights canceled at area airports in the last day, 1,500. Many local school districts closed. Hello, students. Hello, parents. Hello, teachers. Hello, principals. But New York City public schools open today, as you surely know by now. PSAL sports and other after-school programs on this afternoon. Number one phony controversy on the cover of the New York Post was the city slow to plow the Upper East Side below 79th Street early on during the snowfall yesterday as political payback to wealthy voters who did not vote for Bill de Blasio. Really? I think someone's been reading too much about lane closures in Fort Lee. WNYC's Richard Hake came down from the Upper East Side today, right?
I did, Brian. I did come to. I actually was going to take the subway. I saw that the subways were actually running really well, and I knew if I wanted to be on time for work, I should have taken the subway. So I checked on the app. The MTA has that great map that tells you when the 6th train is going to arrive at the station. But then I saw down 95th Street, I can see a little slice of the FDR, and I saw it was moving. And I said, you know what? Why don't I try to take a taxi down and maybe perhaps do a live shot in the taxi during morning edition? And that's what I did.
And the taxi managed to get through the plowed streets?
The streets were definitely plowed. You can tell plows at least went down once or twice. I mean, there was snow on the street, but the plow did go through. The avenues looked pretty good.
And the so-called controversy really had to do with yesterday afternoon, primarily. The city's explanation for the perception is that a GPS failure gave the public inaccurate information about what had been plowed and that the Upper East Side was getting equal plowing and was not the victim of snowplow class warfare. I tweeted out a Gawker article, by the way, this morning, which shows that map that the city releases of plowed, not plowed, or plowed and how long. And there was a lot of yellow, which meant unplowed at a certain moment yesterday on the Upper East Side, but Gawker pointed out the New York Post did not raise questions about the very yellow areas in Brooklyn, Queens, or the Bronx.
What's also interesting is that when you look at that map, that shows the last time a plow that was down that block. Plows go down the block, but there's still snow on it. You know, and people sometimes walk out and say, oh, no, I have my street hasn't been plowed yet. But in fact, it has been.
Which brings us to the question of what counts as having been plowed. Do you need to see black on your street or just have had the plows come through and pack it down enough to drive on? At least one listener tweeted us a photo of a street in Bed-Stuy that he complained wasn't plowed. But to our eye, yes, plowed, according to his own photo. Check it out if you want at Brian Lehrer on Twitter. WNYC Stephen Nesson has been in Bed-Stuy this morning. Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Brian.
What are you looking at and what are you seeing?
Well, I am in Bedford-Stuyvesant right now. And to speak to the listeners' issues, I've spoken to some old-time residents. And they say, in fact, the city doesn't do a great job in their block early in the snowstorm. They'll do maybe a once-over and then let the snowpack sort of build up over the afternoon, especially if it's a street where there's no buses that run down. But then they'll come later in the afternoon. They'll continue salting and sanding it later in the day. But sure enough, there's a lot of streets here where there's about an inch of snowpack. Cars are, you know, spinning their tires trying to get out of the spots. And the other hand, it's very clear plows have come because people are shoveling the sort of, you know, the plowed snow up against their tires. They're shoveling themselves out. That's also delaying people getting to work today.
So in a way, both things could be true. A plow could have come through, but there still could be an inch of snowpack, and people may be having their troubles.
Definitely.
And there is a metric for this, right? They consider plowed if a plow has been through within the last X hours. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar, but I mean, I've definitely seen plows still coming through here, especially on the streets where there's buses. Plows are still rumbling by. it's definitely these side streets that don't have a bus route that you may see people complaining and continuing to sort of shovel themselves out.
Stephen Nesson in Bed-Stuy, thanks a lot. Richard Hake, here in our studio, thanks a lot.
We'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. And we're also planning on taking Mayor de Blasio's news conference, where I'm sure he'll be asked about Upper East Side and all kinds of things regarding the weather and more coming up a little bit later this hour. So we talked about the wacky New York Post cover. Then there's the cover of the Daily News, equally wacky and almost as misleading. Duel at Pre-K Corral is the headline, showing Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo as Old West cowboys ready to battle it out over a policy on which they now officially agree. There will be universal pre-K funding in New York State. And with that as theater of the absurd backdrop, we are happy to have with us Secretary to Governor Andrew Cuomo, his right-hand man in many ways, Larry Schwartz. Mr. Schwartz, thank you very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
By the way, Secretary, that's your whole title, right? You're not Secretary of something.
It's called Secretary to Governor, but when I became Secretary to Governor under David Patterson, my daughter went to my mother and said, how can he be a secretary, Mom? He doesn't even know how to type.
There you go. Your job is not.
It's a little misleading. Some people would call the equivalent chief of staff.
You're not answering the phones for the governor and writing down his message. All right. Let's start with the pre-K corral. Mayor de Blasio still wants to tax the wealthiest New York City residents to have what he sees as a guaranteed funding stream. But the governor wants him to take yes for an answer on having the state pick up the tab. Why not let the city pay for this in its own way?
Well, first of all, Brian, the governor has always been in favor of universal pre-K. He put $25 million for a statewide universal pre-K in last year's budget that got approved, and we've created about 10,000 new full-time pre-K slots statewide, including over 2,000 full-time pre-K slots that began in January this year in New York City. You know, the governor put in his proposed budget a new five-year statewide universal pre-K program where the state will fully fund all the pre-K slots that are needed both in New York City and throughout the state. And, you know, my attitude is, why tax just the tax? The governor has in his state budget for the state to pay for all full-time universal pre-K slots. You know, and so the mayor and the governor are in agreement that we need to do universal pre-K. It's important to give these four-year-olds a start in life, that they'll do better in school, and the money's there to pay for it.
And so we should acknowledge the good news, which is for advocates of pre-K as a priority, it looks like this is going to happen, universal pre-K funding statewide, one way or the other. But why should it even be the governor's business, the mayor might ask, or the state's business to interfere? If a city wants to pass a tax hike on some of its own residents only, or really any policy change not imposed on people elsewhere in the state, why should Albany have any say in that at all, and why should the governor make it a priority to stop it?
I can understand when a municipality comes to Albany and says, I have a fiscal problem, I have a financial problem, I need to raise revenue for something. In this case, the state's paying for what Mayor de Blasio wants. So it goes again to why tax just for taxing's sake? There's no guarantees in life about anything other than death. And so the idea of saying I want a tax because I want a sustainable revenue source, there's two fallacies in that. First of all, raising taxes can be changed at any given time. If you look at the MTA payroll tax that was imposed in 2008 or 2009, the MTA tax was repealed 2 or 3 years later, or it was drastically reduced. So there's no guarantee, and even Mayor de Blasio's plan is, I want to raise taxes just for 5 years. Well, what's going to happen after the 5 years? I guess, you know, the governor and the mayor have a good working relationship. They've known each other a very long time. This is not about fighting. There is no fighting. The media might like to dramatize that there's a difference of opinion on how to fund universal pre-K. The governor says, I'm providing New York City and the rest of the state the money to fund universal pre-K, and we'll move as quickly as New York City can move and the rest of the state can move. And again, If the money is there, why raise taxes on anybody to pay for something when you don't need the money for it?
So there's no pre-K corral. The governor and the mayor weren't out there in their cowboy hats yesterday flashing competing wads of cash?
The governor and the mayor have known each other a long time. Mayor de Blasio worked for Governor Cuomo once upon a time when he was HUD secretary. They've known each other for over 20 years. They're good friends. They respect one another. There's going to be a great working relationship between the mayor and the state. And we look forward to, working together and meeting the goals of providing 80,000 full-time, full-day universal pre-K slots in New York City.
So what
as well as providing opportunities in Buffalo, Syracuse, Rochester, Long Island, and other places throughout the state.
It's great that it's going to be statewide. So on the merits, let's say the mayor wanted to raise that tax anyway in that way, what he would say is a teensy tiny half a point tax hike just on income over $500,000. The people who make that much money aren't even going to feel the few thousand dollars extra for, again, not their whole income, just that amount of the income that's over $500,000. You know how inequality has increased in the city over time. The latest census stats from last fall have New York City as the most unequal place in America. This would be so bad if the mayor wants to do it even for other purposes?
I don't think it's about income inequality. I think it's about equal opportunity, providing equal opportunity for everyone. And that's what the governor's been doing since he's taken office. And the governor's been focused on making New York State economically competitive again. That's why he's been cutting taxes every year since he's been in office. We have the lowest middle income tax rate in over 60 years in New York State, thanks to Governor Cuomo and the New York State legislature. We provided tax cuts again last year, and he's proposing a multitude of tax cuts for renters, homeowners, and businesses. As a result, we've created nearly 400,000 private sector jobs in the last 3 years. New York is back thanks to Governor Cuomo's leadership. Our economy is back. Unemployment's down. Taxes and spending are down. The state is moving in the right direction. New York State is taken seriously. Businesses are investing here again in New York State. He's very active and focused on Startup New York, which are these tax-free zones. We've had over 7,000 calls already from around the country and around the world, people that are interested in bringing their companies and businesses to New York State. And, you know, the idea is to provide equal opportunity. The governor has expanded his youth jobs tax credit. This is about finding young people, especially young African-American men, Hispanic men, jobs. It's creating opportunity for everybody.
But can you argue?
It's not just in pre-K. It's in K through 12. It's in, you know, it's in higher ed.
And there's a zero corporate tax rate for upstate manufacturers in this budget and a lowering of the corporate income tax generally. And you mentioned some of the other targeted ones. And you mentioned the growth in jobs in the last few years.
Renters tax credit to give renters tax relief and to give homeowners property tax relief with the property tax circuit breaker, which will go a long way to helping residents in Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, where you have many homeowners in those boroughs.
And I want to come back to both of those. But is there evidence that these tax breaks for manufacturers and other employers actually create or preserve jobs? I thought politicians are starting to see that kind of a cut as a racket that doesn't pay off, that the employers pocket the money and they create the same amount of jobs they were going to anyway.
No, we believe that it creates investment and it creates job expansion. Presidents of companies, CEO of companies, want to know that if they invest here in New York State, they're going to get a return on their investment. And I think they've seen now through 3 years of Governor Cuomo's leadership, they can count on New York State. We've had four major yogurt plants hiring thousands of employees. Because they believe in New York State. We produce more yogurt than any other state in the nation. How about nano? We are the new Silicon Valley when it comes to nanotechnology. You look in the capital region, tens of thousands of jobs have been created in the nanotechnology field, and now it's gone west in upstate New York. We announced $180 million 1,000 new jobs in Utica, New York. Think about it. When was the last time you ever heard of 1,000 jobs being created in Utica, New York? And now it's gone west to Buffalo. If you look at Buffalo, there's a transformation in Erie County and the Western New York region. You see cranes, which you haven't seen in years.
Because of tax cuts?
Building.
Because of tax cuts?
Because of Startup New York, because of tax incentives, because of, you know, there's a renewed confidence in the way the property tax cap has been a significant motivator to businesses. Businesses pay more in property taxes than they pay in corporate income taxes.
My guest is Larry Schwartz, Secretary to Governor Cuomo, as we talk about the budget proposals yesterday. Let's get back to some of the ones that you mentioned before that are really interesting. A renter's tax credit in addition to a property tax credit or cap that you have for the property owners. How would that actually work? Who will be eligible?
Any renter whose income or whose household income is below $100,000 will be eligible for the tax credit. They'll actually get a check in the mail. And so the credit's based on their income, not on how much rent they pay. And the lower the income, the more of a credit. So it's very progressive. So people that make, say, $25,000 or less will get a bigger credit versus someone $50,000 or less versus someone $100,000 or less.
And the
property tax circuit breaker,
right,
it'll be for household incomes under $200,000.
In other words, you actually pay less property tax depending on your income, not just depending on the value of your property tax assessment?
On the property tax circuit breaker, the only people that will be eligible who are household incomes under $200,000, and then it'll be a percentage of your property taxes that you pay greater than your income.
One other tax I want to ask you about, or tax cut proposal that's in the budget, is to raise the exempted amount of an estate from the estate tax from $1.5 million to $5 million. And then also have that exempt figure keep going up by indexing to inflation. What else do we index to inflation as a matter of state law? Is the minimum wage indexed to inflation?
Well, when we lowered the middle class tax brackets, we indexed them for inflation, so their state income taxes wouldn't go up. So when we lowered the middle class tax rate from 685 to 645 and 665, depending on your income, we indexed that for inflation so that they would continue to receive the income tax cut benefit permanently.
So
there's a number of places where we put indexes in so that people don't see their taxes going back up.
All right. Let me get to a couple of other things.
Let me tell you something. The estate tax, Brian, is the federal government threshold is $5.25 million. So all we're doing is phasing it into what the federal level is. And, you know, this is going to benefit many, many middle-class families. These are going to help farmers who own farms that want to hand it down to their sons and daughters, small businesses. This is not, you know, a tax benefit for the rich. This is a tax benefit for the middle class.
When Senator Scalise was on recently and said the same thing, we had pushback from listeners who said, really, you have $3 million, $4 million, $5 million in an estate that's middle class?
If you own a business, you own a farm, it could easily be, when you add up your home, your farm, your other assets, it can easily exceed $1 million, which is currently what the current threshold is. And then you pay 16% on the $1 million. So many people were saying, I'm going to take my assets out of New York State. And this is to keep businesses, to keep farms, to keep people from moving out of state to places like Florida and to stay here, knowing that they're not going to be unfairly taxed. And, you know, the critics are wrong. I mean, I can't say that, you know, it's not going to benefit some people of better means, but there's a lot of middle-class people. And if you live on Long Island, you live in Westchester, you live upon, you know, your house alone could be $500,000-$700,000. Doesn't mean you're someone of high means. You're middle class.
In the State of the State address, the governor mentioned taking capital improvements at the airports away from the Port Authority and having the state do it. Is that in the budget?
What the governor has proposed is he's going to take over the leadership of rebuilding JFK and LaGuardia airports. There's money budgeted in the capital budget. That's not going to change for the Port Authority. What he's called for is there's going to be the creation of a committee, both the people inside the Port Authority and some other people he's going to appoint from outside the authority that are experts in the area of airport design and airport improvement. And what he's going to do, just like he did with the Tappan Zee Bridge, he's going to turn JFK and LaGuardia airports into 21st century best-in-class airports. These airports are vital transportation hubs for the state of New York. They generate thousands and thousands of jobs. We have 60 million passengers go through our airports. We need to modernize it. LaGuardia Airport is an embarrassment, and he's tired of it. He's tired of the talk about improving it. He's going to take the lead, and he's going to get this airport not only modernized, but we're going to have 21st century amenities. We're going to make the experience for our passengers, our customers, convenient and friendly, and so that when they have to use the airport to get some other place or to come into New York, it's going to be a pleasant and enjoyable experience,
and this is
not a frustrating one that exists today.
This is good and important. Atlanta shouldn't have a better airport than New York City. But before you go, I know you got to go in a minute. On this, people have said the governor has been surprisingly restrained about the George Washington Bridge Port Authority scandal on the New Jersey side. Does this George Washington Bridge scandal reveal that the Port Authority has become too politicized, including state versus state? In your, the governor's opinion, it needs to be reformed or maybe even replaced. And is this proposal regarding taking control of airport capital development a response to that?
Look, we've had a very good working relationship with New Jersey. We've worked well together. They've worked with us with regards to the World Trade Center. They've worked well with us on other projects and putting together capital budgets. The governor of New York has had a good working relationship with the governor of New Jersey. Some people on the New Jersey side made probably some very silly, stupid, or inappropriate decisions, and those people. Have paid for it by being fired or being forced to resign. And, we continue to have a good working relationship with New Jersey. The investigations will, go where they go, and it has nothing to do with New York. And we'll continue to work with New Jersey in doing positive and good things for both people that live here in New York and people that also commute from New Jersey.
And the airport, but the airport proposals are unrelated?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anything else you want to say before you want to go about the budget or anything? Open mic?
No, I think it's a great budget for New Yorkers. It's a great budget for New York homeowners, and it's a great budget for New York renters, and it's a great budget for New York businesses because it's providing tax cuts and tax relief. And it continues to make forward progress for the state of New York. And New York is now seen as a national model, not only in terms of its fiscal restraints and responsibility, but for its social progressiveness, both in the areas of education. And Brian, the other thing is, governor put out reforms to lower the cost for New Yorkers in other areas. We have a proposal to lower auto insurance rates by $150 to $200. For people that have to go out and are going to buy a home or refinance the home, we're reducing title insurance costs. In some cases, on refinancing downstate by $1,800 and upstate $400 or $500. And we're looking to lower people's utility bills. So whether it's their state income taxes, their property taxes, their auto insurance, their title insurance, or their utility bill, the governor is cutting, lowering the costs, putting money back in people's pockets, so they can go out there and spend it, which in essence creates jobs. So it's a win-win all across the board for New York.
Larry Schwartz, Secretary to Governor Cuomo, thank you so much for giving us some time on the morning after the details of the budget proposals were released. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how the NSA can spy on you. The Brian Lehrer Show has compiled a list of all known domestic surveillance programs, some of which may shock you. We will talk through these items revealed in the Snowden documents and elsewhere with Shane Harris, who wrote a book about the NSA called The Watchers. You can see the list right now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or at Brian Lehrer on Twitter, and we will go through some of these very surprising items about what the NSA can do coming up right after this.